Well, thank you very much for staying so late this afternoon with us. Dr. Ernest Carter and I are going to be the two presenting to you this afternoon, and we have a series of other authors that contributed to this presentation. And I want to give you some orientation to who they are through our disclosure slides, actually. I'm Mary Crimmins, and I now work at Premier Incorporated, but for the presentation, the period of time in my life that I'm talking about will range for you from about the early 2000s until about last year. For the Prince George's Project, I was actually helping Dr. Carter with his community health workers and teaching them how to use the health information exchange platform that he was building in Prince George's. Marcia Murphy was the primary community health worker that I worked with to interview to get information about this particular presentation. And I want to call her out because she was the one who was on the street using these alerts that we're going to talk about to try to help patients. Dr. Carter has a long list of qualifications, one of them being that he's a pediatrician, he's been a health informaticist, he's done telemedicine, he's been really around the technology and clinical side of this discussion. Our final author, Dr. Colley from Wright State University in Dayton, Ohio. I worked with Kate in the 2000s on a health information exchange project that they were doing. That project is, as to this day, is still connected to whatever the Nationwide Health Information Network is called at this time. So that persists a little bit. Now, what we wanted to do was to let you know what we're going to talk to you about and give you a chance to stand up and walk out, you know. So here are the learning objectives. We're going to try to describe for you what we've learned, mostly anecdotally, about best practices in handling ADT alerts through health information exchange. And we're going to describe an IT system that both Dr. Carter and Colley have worked on in terms of tracking what have historically been safety net patients, people who are behaviorally challenged, people who have economic challenges, people who have...
Oh, go ahead and rattle. It's okay. I don't get rattled easily as a speaker.
You can get up and walk around. You know, I know it's very cold in here. You can do jumping jacks. It's not a problem. So with that, you know, I was very pleased to see the hands that were raised about who knows about HIE. Who knows what an ADT message is? Okay, good. Very good. So I can talk about it because not everybody knows, right? ADT messages have been used in hospital information systems for a number of years. They are, back to the HL7 question that was raised earlier, sort of standards. They've been modified in a number of systems in a number of ways to tie together the hospital information systems. They were driven primarily by claims data. So they were, when a patient moved in a hospital from radiology to the lab, back to the room, back out to, you know, to another place in the hospital, a message was generated. And these messages have been in hospital systems for many, many years. And people have wondered, well, how can we use these things? And we found that, and Dr. Carter is going to take it up very soon from here, but we found that with a health information exchange, there is the potential to use some of these alerts. Now, not all of these alerts, because there are so many of these alerts that are generated for each patient. There has to be a lot of intelligence added to the alert information. Now, this is where Dr. Carter takes over, and then I'll come back and talk to you a little later.
Good afternoon. I am going to just describe to you what we're doing in Prince George's County and just to tell you a little bit about how we use ADTs. We're starting out just by talking about a health information exchange, and I don't guess I need to define that to this audience because I think it was already done. But in Maryland, our health information exchange is called CRIS, and I'm not going to tell you what the acronym stands for because it doesn't really... I mean, well, it's like Chesapeake Region Information Systems for Patients or something like that, and it, you know, but and I sit on the board, so I can't, I'm a real advocate of CRIS because I'm a very, very much an advocate of health information exchange, And it's Chris that reuses ADT messages to generate alerts to the community providers that we have in Maryland. And we, in Prince George's County, also knew that we needed to have a local exchange for a project that I'm going to describe in the next slide. And we've been able to leverage these ADT messages to help us in care coordination. And that's what I'm going to talk about a little bit. The real issue that that comes up with these ADT messages, as Mary alluded to, was that there's so many of them, and there's not a lot of decision support around them. So the next thing you know, you get flooded with all of these. And the way Chris does ADT is that a provider just says, these are my patients, and they link that to the provider's NPI number. And so when that patient shows up anyway, they get flooded with, they showed him to an emergency room. He went here. All these things happen. So that's what I wanted to just try to talk to you a little bit about when we started to look at this. One thing we understood was that these ADTs actually have information in them, and that information can be very useful in a practice if you start to think about it. Because it'll tell you whether it's a very, very sick patient or somebody who just came in for a refill, or if they're just refilled, they're in the emergency room all the time getting refills. They can give you information. There's a lot of information in ADTs that if you were to do a little data mining, you could start to think about how you might use decision support to help you manage your whole patient population. And that's what we tried to do. Now, and of course, we didn't have all the money in the world to try to do something like that. So we said, well, maybe we just start figuring out how, when our providers get an ADT, what should they start to think about in terms of changing their workflow? Because it makes a big difference whether your ADT comes to the doctor directly through his EMR, or whether it comes to a nurse in the morning who's checking a whole long list of things. And so that's where we were. I wanted to tell you how a project that we were able to get funded in Maryland to help us to even go down this path. And this project was it's called the Health Enterprise Zone Project. The state of Maryland actually put up money to see if, and just left it up to us to say, can you come up with a system to help decrease disparities in a very poor zip code that has low income as well as low health outcomes. Can you come up with a system to help decrease the overutilization of the emergency room, to decrease inpatient overutilization with readmissions? And so we got excited about that project because we said, well, let's pick the poorest, the worst zip code that we have in Prince George's County. That's Capitol Heights. That's 20743. It's called Ward 9 if you live in Washington, D.C. And if you live in Maryland, it's called, if you live in D.C., they call it Ward 9. And I don't know if we're all that happy about that. But anyway, that's what it's. And we get a lot of people crossing the border all the time. It's about 89% African American. It's about you can see the statistics on the board, and a lot of those people overutilize the emergency room, and they really then they end up in the hospital being admitted several times. I mean, we have people admitted 38 to 50 times a year. So, and there's two major hospitals that we asked to join us to work with us, and that receive probably the overwhelming majority of these patients. Dimensions Health Center, which is Prince George's County Hospital, is part of it, as well as Doctors Hospital. And we proposed to work with those two hospitals and to create in that zip code, which had less than one full-time board-certified physician per 10,000, I think it was. That we would create these patient-centered medical homes, in that would create five patient-centered medical homes, link them to these hospitals, and work with that population to be able to decrease their overutilization of the hospital's emergency room and inpatient. And in so doing, we realized that we needed to have a health information exchange. And we started thinking of that exchange because these providers that we were bringing in, we couldn't tell them, you have to use this electronic record. They came in with their own electronic record. And then you had the hospital system, which has an ambulatory electronic record. It has the E. It has an emergency room record. Then it also has a hospital record. And then if you start thinking about, well, maybe I should just look and see if look for the claims data and try to determine something for that, that's 60 days out. So when you say, well, we need data now to help patients now. We need to help. We need to be able to work with patients at the touch point. And so because of that, we knew we were going to need to have an exchange. So we did establish an exchange for Prince George's County, but particularly to work in the health enterprise zone. And what we really wanted to do was to help coordinate the care of the individuals in this zone, in our zip code. Because we knew that if we could coordinate their care, of course, help them get to the doctor after they got discharged from the hospital within a certain time period, 48 hours, 48 to 72 hours. If we could manage them and help coordinate them between doctor visits, if we could help them follow a care plan, sort of manage their medicine so that they wouldn't take the wrong thing, we could kind of keep them out of hospital. It turned out, though, that more than anything, we had to manage their social services needs. So we had all of the social determinants of health care came right in front of our face, along with the clinical, along with behavioral health. So it turned out that we had to manage all of these things in order to help our patients. And we needed to have a real clear understanding of tracking our patients when they came in and out of that emergency room because we needed to get to them at the point of care. It's interesting that we talked about EMS today because we had to form a body called our Community Care Coordination Team, CCCT. We have 45 members. We have people from EMS, from University of Maryland School of Pharmacy. We have all of the county services, like social services, fire and safety. Everybody's there. And what we do is we look at cases that are very difficult to be able to determine what our community health workers should do with these cases and then establish those protocols for them. Because it turns out you get a whole lot of the same thing happening over and over. Our biggest and most enthusiastic advocate in our CCCT are the EMS, because they tell us that there's so many times when they get a patient that all they have to do is, maybe if they're diabetic, just give them some, just feed them a little bit, and that's all. They refuse to go to the hospital. And then if our community care worker follows up with them, we can really avoid a lot of admissions to the emergency room. And so we started thinking about going back to ADTs. Well, maybe we need an alert when the EMS shows up at the house, and then we need a triage system from there so that we can get our people into care coordination from that point, as opposed to get them in post discharge from the hospital. Let's get them post EMS visit. Let's start at the 911 call. So we're thinking about those kind of systems, and those systems are not easy to integrate into the health information exchange, but we're thinking about creative ways to do that. And these using alerts, as this talk is supposed to be concentrating on, is one of the things that we really did focus on. So in Prince George's County, I just put this slide up here because we have a community dashboard that can sort of tell you about the how our outcomes in the county are doing. And when we implemented this care coordination, we didn't put a big dent into these outcomes right now because we've only been doing it for 3 years. But we did do we did look at a cohort of patients. We looked at about 40 of our patients that we've been doing care coordination with and using the alert system by getting to them when we got notified, or actually at least when their care providers got notified and they notified us. And those patients, we had a 67% decrease. 67% of those patients were affected by our intervention. And of that, meaning that they had a decrease in their utilization of the inpatient and the emergency room. And of those 67%, they decreased their utilization by 44.8%. So that was encouraging to us, because we felt that we were on the right track. We also felt that being in real time, and the alert system, that's what the alert system helps us with, is very, very important in terms of doing care coordination. So in the practices who use the alert system, a lot of the doctors in the practices in the enterprise zone, they use the alert system. When we use the alert system, it's all because I'm a doctor, and I have to say every patient that gets discharged from these hospitals are my patients, and that's not working for us really well. We've got to come up with another system. But we do get alerted, and because of that, we've got some best practices, I think. And I think we listed some of them up here in terms of how we use HIE generated ADT alert. One of the practices is that we try to prioritize those alerts. And that's not an easy thing. I don't know if you all have ever tried to do it. It's not easy, but we really do have to try to focus on and come up with a framework and a taxonomy as to how these alerts should be should be prioritized. And then you should also, figure out from that how you're going to improve the quality based on the types of alerts that you get. Some alerts won't help you with quality improvement. Other alerts will. So, when you structure how you utilize alerts, those were one of the things we found that would be important. The other thing is you have to do little steps. You can't go. You got a massive number of them. You have to just try to target the high priority ones and try to figure out how to go about making improvements once you target those. The other thing I think you should take into consideration is that alerts, they do help with care coordination and with especially if you have nurse coordinators out of your primary care, and it has helped us with our community health workers in terms of how we went about doing what we do and the rapid response we can get by getting an alert. I'm going to hand it back over to Mary now, because I think she's going to describe a little bit about how we are going to how we're developing our community health record.
Sure.
And the uses of patient information.
Okay. We only have a couple more. There's a real problem with health information management, and you know who puts things into electronic health records, how things are sourced. So you have to pay attention to that. That's about all I'm going to say on that. Now the last portion here, the work that I did at Wright State early in the 2000s, you know, we thought of ourselves as a community health record because we were already having the school nurses use our records, and you know, people who needed information, we could help provide it to them. So this was developed in the early 2000s. Again, the commonality among the systems is that we both use community health workers to actually do the information gathering on the front lines. We stored the information by household and by individual, and I want to emphasize that because what we were doing with this data is, in the first instance, we had a community access program funded by HRSA, and we had a very low rate of Medicaid participation in the area that we had targeted. So we took the data that was on the Medicaid application and started populating that. We then added the ability in the record for our community health workers to scan in the required income verification, the required address verifications, the birth certificates for the kids, everything that they needed to be able to do the application. Because the state of our Medicaid system in the county at that time, patients would turn up, they'd say, I want to apply, they'd put the application in, they'd say, okay, you need another verification, you need another verification. And then 30 days later, it's been too long, you can't give us another verification, you have to start over. So with the persistence of the record that we built and the types of data elements that we used in this record, we were able to increase the Medicaid participation rate in that county to be the highest one in the whole state of Ohio. So that was a very effective way to do it. And all of these data will help community health workers provide better services to patients. So with that, I think we're done. Here's our contacts. Do you have any questions or any comments? Or would you like to give us any suggestions? We'd be happy to hear.
Yeah.
And Dr. Carter, you want to speak to that?
There are two ways.
Yeah, ours comes from the HIE. You can talk about the two ways. When we get our alerts actually come from Chris. Our exchange is connected with Chris's exchange. So our alerts actually come from Chris. Chris is connected to all the hospitals in Maryland and six of the seven hospitals in D.C. And they developed the ENS system that we use, and it actually other people in the country use it also.
So we get an alert
right now when a patient comes into the, when the patient is discharged from the hospital, when a patient shows up to the emergency room, and those are the primary places. We don't get them from when they're discharged from a SNF yet, or from a long-term care facility yet. That's in the works. We don't get a discharge when somebody goes to somebody, another physician, instead of you, and you get an alert that they went, that we don't do, they, that's not there yet. It's not that the technology isn't there, it's just that that's not quite there yet in terms of policy. And then at Chris, we do things very incrementally, so we do things one step at a time. And so it's really primarily from the hospital system that we get it from now.
So I'll just say, too, that like some states, it really depends upon how their HIE infrastructure's created in that sense. In Maryland, they have a centralized system where it's one HIE for the whole entire state versus, like, say, California, where you have 40 or so HIEs across the state. So there have been instances where, like, say, for example, LA Cares, which is a huge Medicaid provider in the state, is now like receiving ADT alerts specifically for their clients directly from the hospitals because there is no HIE that serves LA currently. Exactly.
Yep. That's going to be the hardest place.
It's really hard.
That's hard. That's where my daughter lives. Nice. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.